As I mentioned, today I'm shifting my show a little bit to make room for discussion about racial equity. It's actually kind of hard not to talk about the COVID-19 crisis and not talk about how Black people and people of color are disproportionately affected by the virus, as well as the negative effects of the shutdowns and impacts from this entire mess that we're in. I've asked Amy Worthen to join me this hour. As I mentioned, she's a writer, collaborator, featured in the Mountain Express, Asheville Blade, Laurel Magazine, Urban News, and her most recent piece is titled "White Folks, Turn Your Outrage into Reparations." We're going to discuss what being a white ally is, how to do it, and how being against racism isn't enough. And it's finally time for us white folks to become anti-racists. Amy, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for inviting me.
I'm so happy to have you here. You seem like just the right person to talk to during this time. Your work has been rooted in social justice for years, and you've spoken out as a white ally for racial justice and racial equity. You've experienced where we are today before with the protests and police response. There's been several times in your life and mine where we've witnessed this. So I wanted to start by asking how you are today.
Let's see. I was crying before I got on the call, and it's a lot right now. It's been a lot, and it's been a lot for a long time. But obviously, the intensity right now is palpable and needs to be honored and felt. So I'm feeling it.
Yeah. Is there anything happening in this event today that's that feels differently than past experiences?
In this moment of the scope of the uprising across the world, I think the scope reached a point where many more people are starting to become aware. I would say many more white people are becoming aware, because obviously people of color have been aware. They can't not be aware. I think that's, and in the context of it happening within a pandemic, which was already bringing a lot of, the systemic, the ways that systemic oppression works to the surface. So yeah, just a lot is happening at once, and the scope is really, hard to ignore. Can't be ignored, hopefully.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Your recent article talks about how white folks can turn their outrage into something a little bit more helpful and productive for the Black community. And I do want to talk about that, but also want to spend some time first to talk about the concept of whiteness and Blackness, as a construct. And so if we start there, it might help our listeners know where we're going. Do you want to help explain what white identity is?
Yeah, I could try. no small feat. One thing in this moment for like a lot of people that are have been reaching out, or that I've been seeing, like I said, being their awareness being activated, is there's a lot of resources out there. There's like a ridiculous amount. So one thing I would encourage people to research is the history of whiteness, which whiteness was actually just a thing that was created. It was actually legislated. And this is where I'm not great with years when I talk about history, but there was a moment in early history on this continent where, in this section of the continent, where the poor immigrants, so they were Irish and Italian and, from whatever countries in Europe, indigenous people and enslaved Africans started organizing together. And the owning class was obviously threatened by that. And that's when certain, like, laws started to be created where this certain types of immigrants, like Irish immigrants, had like a little bit more rights and freedoms, just enough to kind of like, so basically they just, it was a way to divide, you know, the majority of us, you know, it was a way to divide the working class from uprising. So it's, you know, like, I think people, it's, you know, whiteness is like the thing that we don't talk about. It's just assumed, you know, you notice when people are like, a black person did this, or like, they'll mention the race of someone who is not white, but if they don't mention the race, you know, they're white. But it was, it's a made up thing. You know, we used to be whatever our ancestry is. And, the creation of this, means of separation and oppression, you know, is disconnected us as white people from our ancestry, disconnected us, I think, in a lot of ways from our humanity. So it was developed. And then the other thing I would say about whiteness is that there's a it's kind of a documentary. It's called Race, the Power of an Illusion. Mm-hmm. And that shares about just the physiological, like DNA level fact that race is that it's not the, we're the same on a DNA level, and that you know, it's the physical differences are the races aren't like so physically different, other than some differences in appearance, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So it's been a tool of the owning class. That we've all bought into and are raised. It's like, I mean, I always feel like it's like an ocean we're swimming in of water, you know, like we're just, it's so everywhere and it's in us, and it clouds our, you know, our perceptions of ourselves and each other.
Yeah.
And obviously, so built in that creation of whiteness is white supremacy.
Right.
You know, like, I want to name this. Like, yeah, we gave this group, you know, and they started making laws against, you know, interracial marriage and making laws against, you know, what, like I said, different kinds of freedoms. And so the implication is you're better. And you know, and then there's all, you know, the things that happened over the years where they, you know, tried to quote unquote scientifically prove
right.
that certain races were inferior, and you know, all that,
which is complete it's bunk, and yet it still persists today. People, you know, believe that.
Yeah, and it's like people can, even like, you can intellectually learn this information and still have it in your body and in your unconscious.
Right.
The assumption of white supremacy.
And so when talking about whiteness and white privilege or white supremacy, this word white privilege comes up often in conversation. I witnessed a you know, thread on Facebook arguing back and forth, where a friend was arguing that, you know, as a white person, not everybody is privileged. And so, you know, I grew up in a lower middle class household. I was a first generation college graduate. I think my family might not think that they are any more privileged than some black people who might make more money or have better opportunities. So what do you say to white folks to help them kind of understand privilege? Because I don't think everyone quite gets it.
Yeah, absolutely. And like, I felt also maybe early on in this that we should define racism, which is personal privilege plus power. And so, you know, remembering that racism is a system and not like an individual behavior.
Right.
So like, if you say something racist, that person's racist. That's not, we're all, living in racism and acting through in racism, like where no one is immune to it. And so the privileges are almost even like really not really, I mean, when you start to look for them, they're not subtle or, you know, no one in your family, has probably, I don't know, been killed by the police.
Correct.
you know, if you go in a store, do people follow you around? Do you have access to, you know, just moving through the world without having to worry about your personal safety, without having to worry about the constant, you know, tiny things that happen, like it's like tiny little pricks, like constantly all day long, you know, and then the bigger tragedies and upset, you know, like white people are just don't have to deal with a lot of stuff that people of color do. Like we just, and we don't even have to think about it. You know, like there's sort of a classic article that a lot of people read, and now I'm trying to remember what it's called. It was, but it's like a list of things, you know, and she's like, Band-Aids are in my skin color, or, you know, just like things you don't even notice as a white person, because the world is designed for us, or not the world, but our particular society, the world, yes, but, you know, in the context of the United States, it's designed for us. It's designed for us to be able to move through it pretty safely. So, I guess that would be part of how I would answer that.
For folks who are just tuning in, you're listening to a new program on Asheville FM on the coronavirus pandemic. Today I'm shifting and talking more about racial equity. My guest, Amy Worthen, writer, activist, and collaborator here in Asheville. And we're talking about whiteness and white privilege in the context of racial equity and getting to that. So Amy, when you as a white person, when I as a white person start realizing my whiteness, my privilege, I you know, can sometimes feel overwhelming. You start grieving. And realizing, you know, that I am part of this systemic problem, and I feel hopeless to do anything about it. And so can you talk about the grieving process and how we need to get through that so we can move on to some action?
Yes. Grieving is part of the work. It may be a key part of it, and I don't think you get through it until this current configuration of our world collapses and we build collective liberation. You will keep grieving, hopefully. You know, like if you're not completely disassociated. Yeah, so that I think is actually what's happening to a lot of people right now. Mm-hmm. At least a lot of white people in my network are feeling that shame and guilt kind of feelings, and like you said, hopelessness. And one thing I wanted to name about guilt, just a caution, is that it kind of makes it about you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to me, I feel like the goal is to, and feel all the feelings, you know, you can't judge your feelings, you're feeling your feelings, feel them deep. Mm-hmm. You know, I feel for myself, I've been working to move towards a sense of responsibility and not just wallow around in guilt and keep it about myself.
Yeah, it's almost like you feel kind of comfortable there. In a way, it kind of lets me off the hook. You know, I'm white, I'm privileged, there's this huge racial disparity in so many areas, and I'm unable to do anything about it. So I'm just going to sit here and feel sad and hopeless. And that's
right. Yeah.
A little easy.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's interesting to think about I wanted to read, I actually had pulled this, quote up my friend Desiree Attaway.
Mm-hmm.
Encourage everyone to follow her on social media. This what she's experienced, and then like myself and other people that have been working in racial equity with all of these people waking up at once,
right,
is a lot of, you know, input of calls and requests, and like, you know, whatever my inbox looks like, hers looks like, you know, 100 times. But she's like, well, I guess maybe this quote needs to wait. but I'll go ahead and say it. I mean, it's not totally addressing the grief, but poor planning and white supremacy on your part does not constitute an emergency on mine. Mm. I get that folks are feeling this urgency to show up and do something and to act, but y'all got to take a beat. Be strategic, act. No, you won't be perfect. This moment does not call for perfect people. It calls for understanding and analysis. It calls for empathy and compassion. I'm happy to talk, but you got to get in the back of the line. This trauma y'all feeling, I feel every day.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I would say transmute your hopelessness into I can do something. Everyone can do something. And the paralysis of denial and, just like you said, sort of wallowing in your feelings. Like, you can do stuff while you're grieving. You know, I mean, I understand there needs to be space in your days for, a deep grieving. And there also can be space in your days for action. And, hopelessness is so understandable when we look at what we're up against. And then for me, myself, my work is completely oriented around following leaders of color, because those who are most impacted by these systems are the most qualified, and they're the experts in the problem. They are, have the resources and the insight to help us transform these systems. And so, moving when I see the people I work with, people of color I work with, and they're still fighting and they're still doing this stuff and they're dealing with so much more than I have to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
So much more. And like, who's out in the streets all around the world? You know, like, I'm just like, oh man. I mean, there's really no excuse, you know, other than white supremacy is very effective at disengaging our ability to address it.
Right. And I think I've listened to their commentary as well, and it's you know, we worry about our comfort. We worry about what could happen. You know, I'm not going to go down and protest. I might, you know, get tear gassed, or I need to go to work tomorrow. You know, I have my job, and I can't get hung up or arrested or whatever that might be. So, and yet she's saying that, you know, we do have to put our bodies on the line, because Black people's bodies are on the line all the time.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, I think that's like, you know, whiteness is oriented around the assumption that we can be, that we'll be comfortable. And I was actually thinking about this, the conversation, and I was, I've had a lot of learning moments over the years, and this is one that sticks with me. Is I was in an event where there was a ton of people, a big group of people, and there was a circle of chairs around the room, and me with my probably sort of, you know, cultural norms, I'm there early and I get my seat, and people start rolling in and sitting down, and it's a very racially diverse group of folks, and people start having to sit on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
A person stands up, and they're like, you know, there are people of color with disabilities sitting on the floor and white people sitting in the chairs.
Mm.
And to me, that was like, you know, it's just so reflective of how things operate. And that I didn't think about, even me, you know, I think about this stuff all the time. I've been working in this area. Like, I'm always checking myself. I'm always ready to be wrong. I was ready to be wrong in that moment. And I was grateful for that lesson, which has informed the way, you know, I move through the world. And I will make that kind of mistake again, because I'm wired to be okay with being comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And just assume that, yeah, I should have a chair, even though I'm able-bodied and, you know, I'd had a good night. You know, there was no reason not to sit on the floor. No, you know, so anyway, that sort of a what I'd say to that.
Yeah, we had to have it on all the time. We had to think about these things, you know, as a male, I recognize my privilege too. And constantly have to kind of be thinking about my privilege. So I don't overlook things.
And I think I'm glad that you named the gender piece, because I do think that's, I feel like that's one of the reasons why I see more white women involved in anti-racist activism than men, is that at least we can understand oppression.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit more. It's like, I feel like white guys have a whole other layer of stuff you have to also deprogram.
Right.
So.
No, very real. Well, I want to get into your article as well, but again, if folks are just joining me, I'm KP Whaley. This is a new show focused on talking about the impacts, local impacts of the pandemic and the crisis right now. Today, my guest is Amy Worthen. She's a writer here in Asheville, and her blog is amyworthen.com. So you might want to check that out. We're talking about white privilege, whiteness, anti-racist work, and sort of the state that we're in right now in this country. And I just want to remind folks that you're listening to Asheville FM at WSFM LP 103.3 Asheville, and programming support today is brought to you by the Fine Arts Theater. They are specializing in art and independent films, as well as special events. Temporarily closed, but current films are available to watch from their website at fineartstheater.com. Programming support is also brought to you by the Van Winkle Law Firm. The Van Winkle Law Firm is a full-service firm with two locations in Western North Carolina. The firm offers drive-in will signings, conference calls, and video conferences to safely provide clients with legal assistance in this uncertain time. More information at vwlawfirm.com. And Amy, I want to go into your article, and it's White Folks Turn Your Outrage Into Reparations. And again, you can find that at amyworthen.com, Amy, A-M-I, worthen.com. You talk about the outrage that many of us are feeling, and so we have, on one hand, some guilt and some sadness, and then you start feeling maybe some outrage about where we're at and what needs to be done or what can be done. So how what do you do with that outrage? What do you do when you say, I've had enough of this, and this has to stop?
Well, as I mentioned, I listen to people of color, and take my, direction, or just, find my place where I can be of most use through listening to those leaders. I think in Asheville, I have had sort of maybe a different experience than many white people in Asheville, because I have a very integrated, racially integrated community. From just like, I grew up in Hendersonville, and I've just had relationship and friendships, and I worked at the YWCA for 16 years, and I've been in this work for a long time. I have multi-decade relationships with leaders of color in this community, and that is not the case for most people here, and so most white people here. Mm-hmm. And so, I see a lot of confusion as far as the, who to listen to, what to listen to, or how to figure out next steps. And I just want to name right now, like, I wrote that I was, obviously feeling a very intense, all kinds of the intensity, and I was getting a lot of those messages, like, what should I do? And so I wrote that post based on, activism I've witnessed over the years. For example, the NAACP and organizers with that group had been working on the Asheville written consent policy to try and, you know, minimize some of this disparities in police enforcement. And it's not, you know, so it only applies to people in vehicles right now. And so one of the calls is for it to also apply for to pedestrians, which is like, it kind of like with the Johnny Rush situation, like, and, you know, so when I put that post out, I was just drawing from what, you know, and I could give the other examples from the post. And in that moment, I was just drawing from my own reserves and things. And you know, I follow a lot of national leaders and, you know, there's national calls to defund the police. And so I'm adding my voice to that. And I will say I understand that there's been some organizing in the Black community over the past couple of days, and there's going to be some asks coming out, which may or may not be in line with mine. And so I plan to amplify whatever that group of organizers say. But I guess what I wanted to, if I could, I'm not exactly answering your question or talking about, but I wanted to name some stuff. Knowing who your audience is. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, Asheville has, you know, a unique set of the ways racism has worked. You know, our country is built on exploitation and, you know, taking things from people. The Cherokee were here before us. When you learn about the history of what has happened to the African American community here over the years, and it's, you know, it's horrifying. And I just want to say that we're complicit in it. Mm-hmm. And gentrification is just the latest form of colonization. And there was actually another quote. My friend Mike Martinez, he's a musician, and he has a band called the Natural Born Leaders. I bet they've played on Asheville FM before. Or you've played their stuff. And he was like, he's like, white liberals need to shut the can't say on the radio up about a broken system. It's not broken. It was designed this way. And white liberals helped the conservatives shape it that way. That's just how our country was built, under the blood and suffering of brown and black men and women. I don't understand how y'all can really live in these trendy neighborhoods and complain about the death of black men without thinking about the homes of the black men and women you're living in. Think about the relationship of your privilege and its historical link to the forceful taking of black possessions and resources. So, you know, that's how it's always been, and that you're as much as a part of the problem as the conservatives you seem to hate so much. And I just, like, we live in a community where, like, the majority of black people are living in the public housing communities. And I was thinking about this when I think about, like, an international, you know, like the United States and then all these countries around the world, which are predominantly people of color, and the way that as a country, we suck up resources and attention and all that. And it happens on a global scale. And I would love for more of my white friends to understand how that's happening at a local scale and how the dominant white culture here has sucked up resources from communities of color and continue to do so. And until folks understand that, it's not going to shift. You know, like I'm just like kind of shaking right now because, like, all of these calls that are coming out are calls that have been made for so long. You know, mm-hmm. So it's really heartbreaking.
Yeah,
to have watched it, to have been here for a couple decades, actually more than that. I keep getting older, but yeah, and it keeps getting worse, right? It doesn't change. It gets worse, and we're supposedly a progressive city, and we are complicit in this. And so anyway, I had to say that.
Thank you for saying that. You and let's talk about some of those things that you can do. Your article talks about a call for divestment, and I think you know many of us understand that term. I won't spend my money at places that don't support my views. You know, I divest in from things like Walmart because they don't support living wages for their employees, and they union bust and they put mom and pop shops out. So I won't spend my money there. But how do you divest from racism?
Well, the city of Asheville's budget, one third of the budget is for policing. It's like $26 million or something like that. And in this current upcoming budget, which they're going to be discussing next week, they have a $400,000 increase to that budget in the proposed draft 2020-2021 budget. That is, I mean, obviously, you know, policing began as slave patrols. It serves that same role to dominate control. These murders, you know, I know personally from having, you know, I know, like, people I know have had family members, black male family members killed by the APD. We know about Johnny Rush. We know about all this stuff. And so that is a certainly an important place to divest and, you know, simultaneously invest into the black community. And that's why I was like divestment and reparations, mm-hmm. like, instead of spending on, you know, like, Kim Roney, my friend Kim Roney, who is also, you know, people at Asheville FM know about her, and she's running for city council. And she just talks about the budget being a moral compass. So what does our moral compass tell us about how we want our tax dollars spent?
Mm-hmm.
That's one example. There's a lot, but yeah, I think that's one that's very timely because they are working on the budget right now, and because income is down because of the pandemic, although they are getting a bunch of money from, like, I think a federal aid program. So there is, you know, it's most all of the time a matter of will. And that's something that Nina Simone has, that, you know, Mississippi, and I guess, am I allowed to say the name of the song on the air? Mississippi Goddamn. And it's like, she's like, and the liberal, and in the song she's singing, and the liberals say, oh, we need to wait, we need to reform, we need to go, you know, she doesn't say reform, but that's like what she's pointing to, mm-hmm. you know, like, and I've just witnessed it over and over and over and over and over and over and over again in this community, where, you know, when your life is not on the line and your family's life is not on the line and you don't have anyone in your family in jail and all that, you know, that, you might just take a reformist kind of approach.
Mm-hmm. Again, want to quickly remind folks that, you're listening to Asheville FM. This is, the coronavirus, news show. And we're talking today about whiteness and about racial equity, in light of everything that's happening. And my guest today is Amy Worthen. She's a writer here in Asheville and organizer, collaborator in the community. And I thank her for spending the hour with us. I also want to remind folks that, you know, we have waited as long as we could, and we can wait no longer. Asheville FM is ready to celebrate our spring membership and fun drive in the summer, Friday, June 19th through the 26th. If you've been listening, please consider becoming a listener member. We have a goal still of raising $30,000 during that week to help sustain this listener-supported and volunteer-programmed radio station. Instead of t-shirts this year, we're going all in on the face masks. We have some other great gifts and other announcements coming as well. So stay tuned to 103.3 for more information on that, and follow us on social media. Well, finally, Amy, I want to move into the reparations that you mentioned. I have been now finally seeing, and maybe I haven't been looking, but seeing lists of Black-owned businesses that I can spend my money at. What are some other ways that we can help support the rebuilding of Black lives and institutions?
You know, I think again, I'm listening for the call that I think should come out maybe even today. There may even be some kind of a Zoom call or something at 4:30 this afternoon. But that, you know, like I want to hear from the Black community in terms of, you know, what they're calling for. Mm-hmm. I wanted to, it's like there's so many layers of the work that needs to be done, and so many patterns that are so deeply embedded in us. Definitely spending your money with Black-owned businesses. There on my website, there is a list of community organizations that are led by people of color that I've had the privilege of working with. Mm-hmm. So there, it's not a comprehensive list, but it's ones that I have, you know, actually been actively engaged with. Also some community media, like WRES-FM, mm-hmm. kind of another LP station, yep. here, and the Urban News, JM Pro TV, which is actually a Latinx-led online media platform. So seeking that out, but also like I'm always encouraging people to start the work exactly where they are. So where do you work, and what kind of vendors does your business use? Mm-hmm. Are they diverse? What does your staff look like? What kind of work could you do together? Or is it the place where you worship, or is it your friend group? Are you an artist and it's your platform as an artist? Like, how are you using what you have and shifting what you are involved and engaged in? How are you mentoring or opening doors? I mean, a lot of what has happened in Asheville is, you know, just like happens everywhere, you know, people help people that are similar to them or that they have a relationship with, you know, so, and that kind of almost like loops back to the beginning of our conversation around the grief of whiteness and understanding, what it means to be white, spending time grappling with that, spending time. There's a book I highly recommend called My Grandmother's Hands, mm-hmm. Which gets more into the somatics of this stuff. I mean, there's also a lot of great books about the theory and all that, but that book in particular talks about how it lives in our bodies. Because one thing that happens is white people get very worked up at that everything is all of a sudden they've realized, you know, the pandemic that's been happening to communities of color, you know, for centuries is now at their door. And being able to because one of the things that happens with whiteness is that we're pretty sure we're right all the time. there's another great thing. And it's like, there's a ton of stuff on my website, and I probably maybe need to organize it even better because there's a million links and, you know, but there's a, white supremacy culture is an article, and it talks about different characteristics of that, like a sense of urgency. You know, just the ways that we help are sometimes harming, mm-hmm. If we haven't done enough of our work. Obviously spending money, like probably can't do much harm with that. donate, spend, you know, redistribute, you know, the system advantages us and we're likely to have more resources and not just resources, but access to, you know, places where we can influence what things look like. Tables we can bring more people to, you know, that kind of thing. But there's, you know, And I, you know, and a lot, all of this stuff, you know, like I've made all the mistakes, you know, and when I started as a young 20 something, you know, working in racial justice, I was playing out some patterns of white saviorism, or right. I could fix this, or, you know, and again, step back and listen, step back and follow. I try to continually highlight Black leaders and Black thinkers on my website. And, you know, the other interesting thing too is, you know, there's just, I always feel I'm in like an awkward place of like, you're asking my advice, you know, I'm white. I, you know, like, and I probably, like a lot of people are comfortable hearing from me or comfortable trusting that I know what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm white, you know, I get like an extra like cred of like legitimacy. So noticing that, you know, like, don't take my advice, you know, I mean, take my advice, which is to listen to, leaders of color and just like, look at your network, look at your, where your money goes, look at where you have, the power to influence policy, even policy within your office. Desiree Attaway, who I read the quote from earlier, has a lot of great workshops for organizations, you know, online stuff you can find on her website. Yeah, I mean, it's just, and, you know, we have to, there's an uprising. Support it. It's really important to be in a role of amplifying the people that are out there that, you know, that it's beyond past that, mm-hmm. you know, and it you know, so I always think about my work as like a combination of like building and dismantling. And you just kind of have to be doing both at once until we dismantle.
Right.
Everything.
And there is,
and, you know, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And there are resources here in Asheville to anti-racism work that's being done, and don't be afraid to get involved in it and learn. You know, I went through the Building Bridges program and just listened a lot and learned a lot and those programs need our support. And I'm also, you know, I struggled today. I think a lot of white folks like me were afraid to jump into this conversation right away, you know, and because I'm afraid I might say the wrong thing or I might not get it right. I even struggled with, you know, who I invited to this program today and should I, you know, bring a person of color and let their voice be heard. And the reality is the work of anti-racism is work that white people need to do.
Yes, absolutely. And one of those characteristics of white supremacy culture is perfectionism. And so that I think causes a paralysis for white people a lot of times because a lot of us do have this perfectionist thing. So yeah, we're afraid to get it wrong. Guaranteed you're going to get it wrong.
Right.
Guaranteed you're going to do the wrong thing. And, you know, hopefully simultaneously do some good, definitely better than inaction. Definitely better trying and doing something wrong is definitely preferred to turning your head away.
Mm-hmm.
And just be ready for that and know that that's part of the decolonizing, the internal decolonizing that you have to do, which is to let that, you know, when I stayed sitting in that chair, when that was made, you know, and I had just sheepishly moved to the floor, like I was bright red and mm-hmm. like, you know, like I was just shame and, you know, all of that. And I really allowed myself to feel that because that was a lesson and that was a really valuable lesson. And, you know, don't be afraid to feel like crap about this stuff. I mean, please feel like crap about it because as long as we're sort of, you know, not feeling it, then we're just going to follow these same patterns. Another quote I wanted to share, I shared with you, KP, an essay I wrote, which is called Whiteness, Grief, and Belonging. And in it, there's a quote from Kelly Germaine Strickland, who was quoting someone named Mark Charles. And it was, you cannot be a part of a dominant culture of 500 years of dehumanizing violence and come out unscathed.
Yeah.
We need to feel that.
Yeah, definitely. Well, Amy, we're going to wrap up here, and I want to give you a minute to, you know, give us your message of hope. You know, what do you see coming out of these protests and acknowledgement of a real systemic problem here in the United States and in Asheville, and you know. Where do you see us after these protests will quell, these things will go back to normal-ish, you know, I say that in quotes, because normal for white people is going to be very different than normal for people of color. So you know, when the protests are over, where are we going to be on that other side?
I do spend a lot of time dreaming and listening to my friends' dreams and people. Adrienne Marie Brown is a thinker that I really admire, a writer, thinker, facilitator, and she talks about radical imagination and how currently we are actually living in someone else's imagination. We're living in the imagination of the men many years ago who came up with whiteness, who came up with white supremacy. And we need to really exercise our radical imagination to imagine beyond what we've known. Because I think Ursula Le Guin said something like, you know, it's a pretty popular quote, but it's like, you know, people think that we can't, you know, change capitalism, and that they also thought that about the divine right of kings. You know, we can imagine ourselves into a new world, and it has to be a collective imagination. The people I work with talk a lot about collective liberation, and that's where I think you break that white saviorism kind of dynamic, because my liberation is completely tied up in the liberation of Black trans women. And if Black trans women are liberated, we all are. And so I do, I believe we will win. And I believe that it will take us really, like I said, just supporting this powerful uprising, supporting the dismantling of all the junk inside us that keeps us from seeing our liberation being tied with everyone else's, and seeing, you know, another characteristic of white supremacy is individualism. And we need to, you know, continue to learn and build our collective muscles. And so I just see a collective future of care, where we community care, where we take care of each other.
Mm-hmm. I like that vision. Amy, thank you so much for spending this hour with me and with our listeners.
Thanks for inviting me.
I wish you a lot of care as well. And just thrilled to have you here. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you. Onward.
Onward is right.
Okay.
Thanks, Amy.
Bye.
Amy Worthen, writer here in Asheville. Her latest article, again, is White Folks Turn Your Outrage into Reparations, which you can find at amyworthen.com. And now you have something to think about. We're living through a difficult time, and hopefully if we learn and listen, we will get through it and hopefully come out better on the other side. You're listening to Asheville FM. Coming up, we have Amy Goodman and Democracy Now! You'll want to stay tuned for that. And then join me next week. We're going to be talking about this issue of face masks and whether people are willfully angry and fighting against it, or if they're just not smart when it comes to wearing a face mask and keeping us all safe. That's on the coronavirus update next week, Wednesday at 9 o'clock. Stay tuned. Again, next coming up is Democracy Now!, Amy Goodman. And thank you so much for joining me this hour. As a reminder, our spring fund drive is coming up starting on Friday, June 19th through the 26th. If you've been a listener, please consider becoming a listener member. And you can do that with a small donation. And we have a goal of raising over $30,000 during that week to help sustain this listener-supported and volunteer-programmed radio station. For your donation, we'll be giving out a face mask instead of t-shirts this year. And we also have some other great gifts and announcements that we're going to be talking about in the coming weeks. So stay tuned to 103.3 for more information, or follow us on social media, Asheville FM, on all the things. And thanks again for joining me this hour. Democracy Now! Is up next. Stay tuned. Try.
came upon a child of God. He was walking along the road, and I asked him, "Where are you going?" And this he told me, "I'm going on down to Yasgur's farm. I'm gonna join in."
Listening to Asheville FM at WSFM LP 103.3 Asheville.
Provided by the Van Winkle Law Firm, serving Western North Carolina since 1907, Van Winkle is a full-service law firm providing legal assistance for estate planning, divorce, intellectual property, real estate, civil litigation, land rights, and more. Info at vwlawfirm.com or 828-258-2991.
From New York City, the epicenter of the pandemic in the United States, this is Democracy Now!
Today, it's about lifting up the family of George Floyd. Say his name.
George Floyd.
Say his name.
George Floyd.
It's about lifting up the name of George Floyd.
As historic protests against police brutality continue across the country, we'll go to Houston, Texas, the longtime home of George Floyd, who was killed by Minneapolis police last week. 60,000 people took to the streets Tuesday to honor his memory. We'll speak to two of his friends about his community and religious work mentoring young men in Houston and hear George Floyd in his own words.
I want to speak to y'all real quick. I just want to say, man, that I got my shortcomings and my flaws. I ain't better than nobody else. But, man, the shootings is going on, man. I don't care what hood you from, man. Where you at, man? I love you and God love you, man. Put them guns down, man. That ain't what it is.
Then, as President Trump threatens to designate anti-fascists as terrorists, an internal FBI...